Play fake. Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. He caught it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa! C.J. Beathard!
The sting of that loss, and yet that's the greatest, one of the greatest calls in sports history. I am Hank Jones. Happy Wednesday evening. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio. Can be found at blogtalkradio.com. Starting every Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al, Mamma Mia No Sharia. Me, Hank Jones, on Wednesdays, 6 p.m. I'm not doing hankerings for a while. I was going to try and do them on Thursdays, but my paddle schedule has changed. Bioluminescence is out, so when I do one, I'll pop it up in time so everybody can see it. May also do a Friday once in a while. Saturday night's Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam. And we are trying to fill out the rest of the schedule, folks, to have someone here every day, but it's kind of tough right now, believe it or not. So, yeah, I am hanging out in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost. The mini Aussie has been fed. Man, she was jumpy today for it, too, man. She was, like, jumping and, like, pawing at me. Okay, so think about this. She's a miniature Australian Shepherd. She's about 16 inches tall. When she jumps, she can jump up and, like, hit my shoulder with her paws. She's a jumper. She is. She's a leaper. Anyway, she's fed. Mrs. Hank is over in Acoustic Hank Land. Working diligently, getting over COVID. She had it a couple weeks ago. She was diagnosed or tested positive, I should say. She made it through. She's a slow healer, though. Like, when she gets an injury, anything like that, she's a slow healer, but she's doing better. And so I'm doing fine. Don't worry. I haven't tested positive. I don't have symptoms. I just have my usual allergies. Yeah, I live on Benadryl, basically, most of the year. There's always something that trips me up. So I'm not doing internet laughies for a while because of what's happening in the Middle East. I know there's funny stuff going on, but I'm just not in the laughy mood, I guess you should say. I'm still humorous. I'm still irreverent and all that stuff, but I'm just not in the laughy mood. That's what it boils down to. So let's get to our obituaries for this past week. Ones of note that I deem notable. Last Wednesday, we lost singer-songwriter Rudolph Isley of the Isley Brothers to a heart attack at age 84. Yeah, he was a genius, musical genius. One genius piece that he gave us was this. Now, I know some of you that grew up in the 70s are probably thinking, you know, what's that? But this was genius, trust me. And I'll tell you something else. The guitar solo on the second part of this is amazing. All we heard was part two. When I bought the album, what most of us missed was part two. It featured an absolutely amazing guitar solo. You're hearing the guitar part here. First on the brother, then he compared him to Hendrix. Not only ballad, but rather apropos, given that Hendrix was with an open for the Isley Brothers early in his career. Let's listen to it. Turn it down a bit. Yeah, some genius guitar work by Ernie Isley. But Rudolph Isley, Hall of Fame singer and songwriter, gone at the age of 84 after an amazing career. We also lost former Dallas Cowboys fullback Walt Garrison. He won a Super Bowl with the team. He made the Pro Bowl in 1972. Went on to a commercial career for Skoll chewing tobacco or snuff. Made him more famous than his football career. As an Oklahoma State Cowboy, he led the Big 8 Conference in rushing in 1964. Want to know one of the people he finished ahead of, believe it or not? Gale Sayers. Ironically, his Dallas Cowboys career was ended by an injury suffered during an actual cowboy event, steer wrestling. Yeah, true story. He was a cowboy in the offseason. An all-around good football player, good guy. Walt Garrison was 79. Thursday, we lost actress Laura Parker at age 84. No cause was listed. She's known mostly for soap opera roles, but she figured into one of the all-time best adventure-slash-horror movies of all time, a personal favorite of mine, Race with the Devil. If you don't know it, maybe you shouldn't know it. Saturday, we lost Oscar-nominated and Emmy-winning actress Piper Laurie, 91, age 91, extended illness. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Carrie and for Children of a Lesser God. And then she was also nominated for Best Actress for her role opposite Paul Newman in The Hustler. She actually won a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress in the TV series Twin Peaks and an Emmy as Best Supporting Actress for the TV film Promise. We also lost former PGA Tour golfer Andy Bean at age 70, complications from lung replacement surgery. 11 PGA Tour wins, including the 1986 Byron Nelson Classic. Sunday, we lost actress, singer, sex symbol, and ad mistress Suzanne Summers to cancer at the age of 76, one day, just a day before she would have turned 77. She made her mark, obviously, as the ditzy blonde in Three's Company after a bit of fame as the mysterious driver of the white T-Bird in the blockbuster American Graffiti. Later played a tough but loving mob and sheriff in She's the Sheriff. So, well, she had a seventh season run alongside Patrick Duffy in Step by Step. And, of course, every red-blooded American male loved her for the Thighmaster. In reality, she suffered from the same timing and fate as the likes of like Jane Mansfield and Mamie Van Doren. Pretty and sexy, yes, but when put up against some of her contemporaries, she was not top dog. I mean, she came along at the same time. Think about this as Charlie's Angels, for instance. I mean, Suzanne Summers was hot, maybe, but against Farrah Fawcett, Cheryl Ladd, Jacqueline Smith, etc., yeah, almost average by comparison, although certainly not average. Hell, her Three's Company replacement, Jenna Lee Harrison, was probably hotter if you went strictly on looks. Still, she was definitely a near icon in American pop culture for a couple decades, and for all intents and purposes, showed herself to be somewhat of a down-to-earth person. We also lost actress and casting director Joanna Merlin at age 92. Now, though she appeared in some noted films and TV series, rarely, if ever, did she play any memorable characters. To wit, she appeared in these movies, The Ten Commandments, All That Jazz, Fame, The Killing Fields, Mystic Pizza, City of Angels, and on the small screen, L.A. Law, Northern Exposure, Law and Order, The Good Wife, Homeland, and Law and Order SVU. Now, pick her out of a lineup, am I right? Yeah, exactly. As an FYI, I will not note folks killed in the Israel-Hamas war as long as the powers that be among media are including members of Hamas, as well as those imaginary group, the Palestinians. There's no such thing, folks. Anyway, don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service. Messaging and call center services for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, service company large and small, hospital entities, government entities, surveys. Also, if you do remote work, they like working with remote staff. Guess what that does? It minimizes or mitigates disasters like hurricanes or snowstorms or whatever. And if you're one of those companies that never went back after COVID, well, guess what? Alliance Communications is the perfect fit because they can be your front line. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or check them out on the web, alliancecommunications.com. So let's get to it. Riley Gaines was apparently canceled by the folks at Penn State. Now, this is not a shock, folks. I mean, yes, Penn State's a Big Ten university. Big Ten universities are not known for their conservatism. I mean, you know, I went to Iowa. Indy Hawk, who's in the chat room, went to Iowa. I don't remember any conservative rallies of any kind. But anyway, she said Penn State abruptly canceled her Real Women's Day speaking event, stating they canceled an on-campus speaking event, shared a video of the university president declaring the school's commitment to the First Amendment. She says, no way president of Penn State makes a whole video explaining why public institutions are legally obligated to let bigots, apparently like me, on campus to speak, then proceeds to cancel my speech tomorrow for Real Women's Day. Penn State says, no, that's not what happened, but it was supposed to be held last week. Date was chosen because women have, it was October 10th, spelled out in Roman numerals as XX, you know, 10-10. Date was chosen because women have two X chromosomes. Now, Riley Gaines has been outspoken about males competing in women's sports. By the way, another sport, cycling, had two men finish in the top two in a women's event. Way to go. So she said, the president said they must continue to host controversial speakers, but students and faculty said no way. So, yeah. They claim that it's never been, that they didn't cancel it. They said that Turning Point USA, which is the student group bringing Riley Gaines to Penn State, didn't meet the deadline for getting indoor space, didn't submit required reservation documents. Yeah. They said they were unaware she was slated to speak there. Oh, really? She's, Riley Gaines, for her part, said, I mean, do you need confirmation that I was scheduled for a room on campus? Cancellation was done after scheduling through Leadership Institute, which is not a campus-affiliated group, after TPUSA didn't meet the deadline. But TPUSA did initially meet the deadline, but the university wouldn't meet with them until the 30 days prior had passed. I would be happy to share those communications, she posted on X, formerly known as Twitter. When they were told that the person speaking was me, suddenly they were staffing demands and other competing events. She posted these emails, etc. Very interesting. Not shocking, though. Here's some stuff I get on Twitter. So, you know how on Facebook you have Facebook Messenger? Well, Twitter, you can do private messaging or direct messaging. I don't do them. I mean, if somebody I know, like if Vito sends me something, I would. But for the most part, I don't send direct messages. But, okay, so I'll occasionally follow people that I don't know. Someone likes a post that I do or likes, you know, when I put out the notice for their show is an example. People might follow me from that, and I'll follow them back. Well, sometimes people that I don't know who have no connection somehow see it, and they will follow me. So I'll follow back. I mean, I think it's the correct or the polite thing to do. But I get these direct messages all the time. Like, here's one. Hello. It's nice to meet you. How are you doing? God bless you. Now, that one's pretty harmless. Here's another one. After getting – this is – there were several from this person, and I'm guessing that she is, I'm hoping it's a she. I hope it's not a guy masquerading as a she. But again, I don't want to say porn, but something sleazy. But she said, the last one was, I live in London. It rains a lot here. Have you ever been to London? What the hell? I don't get it. Further, via Twitter X, here's furthering the idea of how messed up this planet it is. We have this appearing on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Twitter now known as X. This is a post from a guy called Ollie London, O-L-I London. It says, man who identifies as a baby gets special access to children and little ones by volunteering at a local school in South Shields, England. The man, who is the founder of autism charity Awesome-tistic, visits schools and local families using the catchphrase, it's okay to be me. Now, the picture of this person, well, I'm not sure what's going on. Has his hair tied up with little braids, has a pacifier in his mouth. That's just the picture. So anyway, according to a local newspaper report, the man, quote, helps families, businesses, schools and the general public to learn about the autism spectrum disorder and what can be done to help younger people have a better understanding of it. Although the main focus of his organization is to teach and learn about autism, he is proud to say that it also focuses on acceptance with the tagline, "It's okay to be me." Yeah, there's a creepy element already here. I'm seeing this. So here's his post. "Hi, everyone. Fantastic day today doing the most important job one-to-one with little ones. For safeguarding, I won't be able to talk about anything and won't be posting any more about the awesome little ones, but I will be busy for the next 5 weeks helping little ones." He keeps saying little ones here. "So if you don't see me about on the media, it's because it would be all the same posts every week. Stay awesome, and if I could make even one little one feel good about their autism," spelled T-H-E-R-E, "autism, and see some strength in it, then I'm doing what I said I would. See you all soon." This is fucked up. I'm sorry, it's fucked up. As one person said, "These are the types of fetishists and perverts we are talking about when we want to protect our kids. People like him hide in the LGBTQ community to reap the benefits of recent years to gain more access to certain places in society while receiving more protection than those they approach. The LGBT community must come to a decision on who they want to separate from, because everyone is negatively impacted by anyone who is potential groomer or pedophile." Yeah, you got to see this. I mean, here's the poster is OLI. OLI London TV, at OLI London TV. And it's a post from, I can't see the initial date of it. Oh, August 16th. So it's a while back, but I just had this for some reason. I'd saved it. It's creepy. I'm sorry. It's just a what the fuck is what it is. It's all it is. I mean, you're looking at the... identifies as a baby. One person put in the meme of that guy, Chris Hansen, Dateline NBC. Remember who? Now, that dude was creepy himself, but he was supposedly protecting. You know how, like, somebody would show up at some house and say, "Oh, brought ice cream," and then he'd, like, pop out from behind the door and say, "Did you bring ice cream for me?" Still, he was creepy the way he got out there. Really was. But yeah, so that's, you know, our planet ain't getting any better, is it? Next several stories are from Fox News. This is to show how diversity works in media, apparently, at least when it comes to being insightful, then descending down to allowing stupidity, and then the inane, and then flat out the hunger for attention. Here's the insightful. A Palestinian refugee wrote an op-ed of sorts saying that, it's titled, "Taking it from a Palestinian refugee, Israel's Gaza invasion is necessary and welcome. Says the rape, torture, and murder that Hamas has committed is inexcusable." On October 13th, the IDF announced they had entered the outstripped skirts of the Gaza Strip. "As a Palestinian refugee myself, Israel's forthcoming liberation of the Gaza Strip is long overdue. They perpetrated a massacre when they violated Israel on October 7th, and in a spree of blood-curdling violence, they tortured and raped children, women, and the elderly, murdering over 1,300 and taking an estimated 150 hostages." He says, "As a Palestinian," I'm sorry, that's where I've got to go disagree, because there's no such thing as a Palestinian, just like there's no such thing as Palestine. "As a Palestinian, I find the actions of the terrorist group beyond abhorrent. During its brutal invasion, Hamas killed, injured, and abducted scores of Muslim Israelis, including Bedouins." That's why he's mad. "Hamas, the regime that just committed shocking genocide and used rape as a weapon of war, seized military control of the Gaza Strip from the weak forces of the Palestinian Authority and local warlords in 2007. Under their regime, Palestinians are executed and public music is prohibited. Even as Hamas misgoverns the Strip as a terrorist haven, It is a much maligned Israel that, until this week, has provided large portions of the energy, food, and medical supplies that keep it functioning. Israel never wanted control of Gaza, and between Israel's independence and 1967, it was controlled by Egypt, which never attempted to create a Palestinian state. Israel gained control of this territory during the 1967 Six-Day War, but unilaterally departed under Ariel Sharon in the disengagement of 2005. withdrawing over 5,000 settlers. So, yeah, this is a pretty normal, because he says Hamas is engaged in a series of escalating provocations, largely featuring rocket attacks, and, of course, the kidnapping of Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit in 2006, who remained a hostage to Hamas forces for 5 years. He says, in hindsight, this was an eerie premonition of the capture and enslavement of innocents that Hamas just carried out on a massive scale. Now, on top of sexual abuse and torture, it is feared that the hostages will be used for the same purposes as Hamas has long used the people of Gaza, human shields to protect Hamas' military and political assets. Take it from a Palestinian perspective, the unforgivable brutality Hamas just displayed against Israelis is what our population has experienced from these cold-blooded murderers and thugs for the past 16 years since they took control of Gaza in 2007. In the days and weeks ahead, innocent Palestinian blood will be on the hands of Hamas as they pay a terrible price for their villainy. As Israel does everything in its power to bring its people home, don't fall for the tricks anti-Semites perpetrating lies about who is responsible for this war. Believe your own eyes and common sense. The raping, torture, and murder that Hamas has committed is inexcusable, full stop. Gaza's liberation is long overdue. Please, Israel, deliver our people from the wicked power of Hamas. Now, it's a little, you know, like I said, there's no such thing as a Palestinian or Palestine, but as a Arab refugee in that area, it makes sense. Now, here's one of those, why is this even a question or is it the necessary article? This is also from Fox News. Blue Jays, Toronto Blue Jays, Eric Swanson defends hunting with his young son. I am teaching him a very important life lesson. Just finished his first season with the Blue Jays, a pitcher. He defended going hunting with his young son after he posted a photo that showed the two in front of a handful of dead geese that they shot on a hunting trip. Swanson posted the photo over the weekend and received pushback in the comments section of his post. Yeah, there you go. It was on X, now known as Twitter. He responded to a Blog Toronto post on the backlash and defended the picture. I am an avid hunter fisherman, and I always will be. People who are asking me why I have my son with me, I am teaching him a very important life lesson. The beef, venison, poultry, fish, fruits, and vegetables all come from somewhere, not just the grocery store. Now, when he hunts and harvests his own food, he knows exactly where his food is coming from and what is in it. Next time you go to the grocery store or restaurant and order something, remember that it had to come from somewhere. Know what you are eating. Safe hunting to all. He wrapped up his fifth season in the majors, his first with the Blue Jays. So I ask, why should he even have to defend himself? I don't know if he lives in Toronto. If he lives in Canada, then that's a different story. Not because it's less legal, but you know they're kind of wackos about guns. Yeah, why does he have to defend himself about hunting? I mean, presumably he's gotten the necessary licenses and his kid has had the necessary safety classes. Why is he even having to defend himself for a perfectly legal activity? Now we head into the Where is Our State Department? Florida nonprofit evacuates Americans from Israel and asks, where is State Department? Project Dynamo. Americans by the hundreds have turned to Dynamo to find a way out of Israel as airlines pause service and avenues out of the country continue to disappear. My team of case managers who are based in America, they've been awake for 3 days just fielding hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of requests from Americans who are stuck, Project's founder and CEO Brian Stern told reporters during the first of several daily updates. Most of those equal a few people, meaning a father reaches out representing his family. Not always the case, but very often the case, explained, saying his team completely saturated with requests. Yeah, Dopey Joe said at a press conference that his government has confirmed American citizens are among the hostages taken. Israel has launched its own hostage rescue operations. U.S. is apparently providing intelligence. American, United, Delta, and others have suspended service to Israel, with United telling Fox Business that, quote, the safety of our customers and crews is our top priority. Yeah, they rescued people in Maui during the wildfires. They conducted evacuation and rescue operations in Afghanistan after we left there, and Ukraine. Yeah, it says we're still pulling Americans out of Afghanistan. I have 22 Americans I'm trying to get out of Afghanistan right now. So we're busy. We're busy all the time with all kinds of things. Stern served in U.S. Navy intelligence, U.S. Army, and even a first responder on the morning of September 11th, 2001. They famously pulled an American out of Russian captivity last year. So they basically had to pivot and focus everything on Israel right now. Yeah, it's just, and I think, what's his name, the representative, Corey Mills, that's also involved and had to help out. I mean, it's just, where the hell is our State Department? Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey, Republican of New Jersey, submitted a letter to Dopey Joe urging the White House to, quote, arrange for the immediate evacuation of American citizens in Israel who are desperately trying to return home. Oh, God. Yeah. Remember that National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan? Middle East is as good a shape as it's ever been. Yeah, it's just, it's a mess. But, yeah, where is our State Department? It's a normal article, though. You know, it's not, you know, it's not out there yet. Now we're still in somewhat normal territory, although we're getting there, folks. We're going to devolve, don't worry. This is also from, these are all from Fox News. I'm just trying to show you, quote, unquote, the diversity, but how it gets bizarre. So the NHL announced the ban of the use of pride tape they're on ice in updated guidance for theme nights. They announced in June teams would no longer be permitted to wear specialty jerseys as part of theme night initiatives. Remember, several players declined to wear them. So the NHL, rather than face all kinds of backlash, just said no, none. They doubled down last week. They informed teams they will no longer be permitted to use rainbow stick tape. That's when you tape your stick for hockey play. Those that played hockey understand. Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly of the NHL confirmed to the AP that league issued a memo to all 32 teams week clarifying the rules players must abide by for theme nights. It included a ban on pride tape for sticks and reaffirmed that specialty sweaters for themed nights, including pride, hockey fights, cancer, or military appreciation celebrations, will not be permitted on the ice. ESPN first reported about this memo last week. According to a league source, the memo stated that the players should be encouraged to express themselves off the ice. Pride Tape, the makers of the athletic tape, released a statement on social media addressing, quote, the setback. Pride team is extremely disappointed by the NHL's decision to eliminate Pride Tape from any league on ice activities. The league has used language in recent days which would prohibit the tape from any proximity to NHL hockey. We hope the league and teams will again show commitment to this important symbol of combating homophobia. Why? Why is it necessary for hockey players to do it? If they want to do it, if an individual player wants to, that's fine. Why should it be mandated? Since we hope the league and teams will again show commitment. But many of the players themselves have been exceptional advocates for the tape. You know, they're saying it's now clear the NHL is stepping back from its longstanding commitment to inclusion and continuing to unravel all of its one-time industry-leading work on 2SLGBTQ+ belonging, the YCP project said. That's the You Can Play project. They say, we are now at a point where all the progress made and relationships established with our community is in jeopardy. No, actually, what's happened is you've fractured them. you may have your own relationship in your own mind, but you have fractured all other relationships. Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, is right. It became more of a distraction. Hockey, let hockey be hockey. Why do they have to have nights for this, nights for that, and themes for this? Just let them play the damn game. Now, here's something I'm going to be reading later that Indy Hawk just sent me. Indy Hawk, as I said before, is in the chat room. Joseph Gibson's also in Indy Talks About. He even had to break up a couple liberal rallies at the Doghouse. I remember those. The Doghouse, a legendary place in Iowa City history. So, okay, so we're still in somewhat normal territory. Now we're getting to, okay, all right, but why not well before now? Swift and Wesson has officially moved their headquarters to Tennessee after being in New England. Now, NRA Executive Director of Advancement Tyler Schropp told Fox News Digital, congratulations to Smith & Wesson on their grand opening in Tennessee. This move is a testament to their enduring legacy, their commitment to firearm excellence, and to the importance of preserving America's gun industry and the Second Amendment rights. So, they were established in Connecticut in 1852 and then moved their headquarters to Springfield, Massachusetts, as in Spring, you know, Springfield Armory, Springfield Rifles, Springfield, you know. Now they call Maryville, Tennessee home. Why has it taken this long, though? So Smith & Wesson CEO, President CEO Mark Smith said, from where I stand, the next 170 years of Smith & Wesson are looking pretty good. It is something special here in Tennessee. He touted the state's gun laws and his close work with local leaders for the move. Said the relocation was seamless. Democrat-led Massachusetts has some of the most strict gun laws in the U.S., while Republican-led Tennessee has expanded gun laws in recent years, including approving permitless carry in 2021. Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn attended the ribbon-cutting event Saturday and told Fox News Digital that her state is thrilled to welcome the gun manufacturer. She says, in Tennessee, we know that the Second Amendment is non-negotiable and are pleased to officially welcome Smith & Wesson to Maryville. Their significant investment in our state is a testament to our pro-business policies, and we look forward to their continued partnership to bolster our economic development and exceptionally skilled workforce. So it really does beg the question. I mean, I think it's great. Don't get me wrong. But why is it just now happening? Why has that not happened 20 years ago, 30, 40 years ago? Why is it only now? Okay, the next are true stories, but it's getting toward repugnant. As I said, we were going to devolve here. Pro-Palestinian protesters blame Israel for Hamas terror attack in, quote, repugnant demonstrations. Even the New York governor, Kathy Hochul, claims it's morally repugnant. Hundreds of protesters, it says. Hundreds of protesters turned out in that, when I say Tennessee, in New York City over the weekend. Democratic Socialists of America, a group that boasts six members of the U.S. House, including members of the Squad, took place in Times Square and then advanced down 42nd Street to Bryant Park, close to the Israeli consulate. They said the attack is at Israel. They laid the blame for the attack at Israel's feet. Literally, laid the blame for the attack at Israel's feet. Yeah, I guess I'd call that abhorrent. But it's worse than that. Okay, so New York Governor Kathy Hochul condemned the rally ahead of the start. Great. I mean, how hard is that to do? Really, when you think about it. But, I mean, how is this happening? You know, that's my question. But yeah, so they had this rally Hundreds marched through the city's Midtown area, many chanting, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." How stupid are these people? I mean, not only that, when is someone going to tell them and set them straight that there is no such place as Palestine? There has never been a country of Palestine. In spite of even what the UN is trying to do, there has never been a country called Palestine. There never has been anybody that's Palestinian, including the PLO founder, Yasser Arafat, who was Egyptian, never lived in Palestine. His family never lived in quote-unquote Palestine. Anti-Defamation League notes that that's really a call for the elimination of Israel. And here's one of their other rallying cries. Resistance is justified when people are occupied. Are these people that... Where is this happening? I guess we're going to find out in a few minutes with some school stuff. Hawkeye Mike just sent me a thing about the rush to judgment about the hospital bombing. They wanted it to be true, just like the bogus Russian collusion. And, of course, it wasn't true. It was Hamas. So the next one's not much better. Might actually be worse. But so, yeah, these are people like the Squad and whatnot. But they're blaming Israel for the attack. And here's another one that the Squad did. Squad has member Squad Dems face backlash calling for ceasefire. Squad House Democrats, known for criticizing the State of Israel, faced massive backlash from conservatives online over their milquetoast statements following Hamas's deadly surprise attack on Israel. Several members published statements de-escalate, calling for the conflict to de-escalate. Rashida Tlaib didn't say anything yet at that point, hadn't said anything. AOC, of course, at that time called for a ceasefire and de-escalation. Says, today is devastating for all those seeking a lasting peace and respect for human rights in Israel and Palestine. I condemn Hamas's attack. No child and family should ever endure this kind of violence and fear, and this violence will not solve the ongoing oppression and occupation in the region. She says, an immediate ceasefire and de-escalation is urgently needed to save lives. Ceasefire from who? Exactly. Called her a Hamas apologist. She said, Hamas apologist asking for ceasefire after one side launches a massive terrorist attack. Nice try. Ilhan Omar said, the horrific attacks we are seeing unfold in Israel against children, women, and the elderly, and the unarmed people who are being slaughtered and taken hostage by Hamas. Such senseless violence will only repeat the back and forth cycle we've seen, which we cannot allow to continue. We need to call for de-escalation and ceasefire. I will keep advocating for peace and justice throughout the Middle East. Okay, so, like I said, these stories are starting to devolve. I mean, you know, and I'm not knocking Fox News. I'm just saying it's what media is happening. And Fox News, which, you know, tries to be fair and balanced and all that, you know, it's spiraling. I don't understand. This is what I don't understand. I don't understand. It's kind of like Nazi Germany in a sense that much of Nazi Germany, most of the people were not anti-Semitic. They were told that they needed to be anti-Semitic. They were told that, you know, the problem was, but they weren't, the people themselves weren't really anti-Semitic. It was the people in power. And that's what's happening here. Most Americans aren't anti-Semitic, but much of the people in power are. The Squad, many people in the Biden administration, despite Dopey Joe at least saying, support Israel. The problem is many of the people in his administration don't. Now, what I'm guessing, because I do say this is Obama's third term, what I am guessing is that there are high-power, wealthy Jewish donors that are saying, ends now. You don't condemn this. You come out one iota for Hamas or Hezbollah or Palestinians, whatever you want to call it, that the money stops. And they, you know, that they can't possibly abide that. They can't tolerate. They can't survive that in their own minds. How, I mean, we are seeing anti-Semitism from people who don't even understand the conflict. I mean, people can't possibly understand the conflict. It's just, okay, so now we're really starting to descend with this next story. This is this one, okay. Protesters taken into custody after vandalizing table at Riley Gaines' speech at Penn State. Now remember, she wasn't even allowed to speak. The two people were detained on the campus after appearing to cause a disturbance during Riley Gaines' appearance at the school, according to videos posted on X, formerly Twitter. She was expected to be there, but remember, her thing was canceled. But they were at the table where she was expected to attend the rally. They start knocking objects off. Another person is shouting at someone, calling him transphobic. Flips over the table. Officer approaches the two. He appears to bring one into custody, who responds, "Don't effing touch me like that." Another says, "Will you effing let," calls the officer a bitch. Another person asks if they're being detained. Officer's told they are. Video cuts to two people in handcuffs next to a police vehicle. A bystander asks, "What are they being arrested for?" And they said, "Disorderly conduct right now." Yeah, she finally did get to speak. One of them was seen in video going up to several people and screaming at them, swearing at them. Protesters came up to her during the speech saying, "Trans lives matter." She had said they canceled her appearance, but what happened is they didn't give her space she was supposed to have. But yeah, people come up and start attacking. All these peaceniks, don't you know? So like I said, we're starting to descend a bit. So next one tells you we're sinking a little further. Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville had to refer former CIA head Michael Hayden to Capitol Police. CIA director, ex-CIA director, suggested that Senator should not be considered a member of the human race. Called it a politically motivated assassination suggestion from former CIA and NSA director, General Michael Hayden. With expectations that the police will protect congressional members and bring criminals to justice. Earlier Tuesday, Hayden tweeted that he was, quote, "surprised to wake up this morning and discover MAGA nuts had lost their minds over my suggestions that coach," he put quotations, "Tuberville not be considered a member of the human race." The tweet was a direct response to comments he made the night before. So a social media platform user, ex-user, asked if Tuberville should be removed from committees because evidently Hayden says Tuberville's blocking nominations for certain things, certain appointments. Who was? Who cares? That's his prerogative. If he can do it, it's his prerogative. So somebody said, should he be removed from his committees? And Hayden said, how about the human race? Says the comment appeared to be in response to the senator's decision to continue to hold his military nominations, to put his hold on military nominations over the Pentagon's abortion policy. Policy pays for Department of Defense personnel's out-of-state travel for reproductive services, including in vitro and abortion. Told NBC News last week, and the senator had no intention of ending his hold amid the terrorist attacks by Hamas against Israel. Hayden has called Tuberville out in previous posts, including one in September when the social media user asked if it was wrong to call Tuberville a racist. "I have aphasia. Sometimes my meaning isn't clear. What I meant to say is Tuberville absolutely is a racist. Or in other words, it is not wrong to say he is a racist." Said that morning, Tuberville said that morning my office was made aware of statements made by Hayden calling for a politically motivated assassination. This statement's disgusting and is repugnant to everything we believe in as Americans. Given General Hayden's long career in Washington, he must have known that by making such a statement, he was committing a serious crime. His own efforts today to reinterpret what he said are only a tacit admission of guilt. Yeah, if any CIA or NSA director under any Republican president, namely President Trump most recently, they'd be calling for their head. I mean, when you see what people like Robert Reich put on Twitter, remember Robert Reich, shorty, 4'11", always coming up short, as I like to say. Well, remember he was literally on Twitter calling for re-education camps, the truth and reconciliation stuff, re-education camps. Can you imagine if any conservative of note got on Twitter or any other social media platform and called for re-education camps? But Robert Reich does it all day. Nobody says anything. And in this case, General Hayden makes this comment saying, how about, should he be removed from committees? And he says, how about the human race? Now, somebody can say that's a joke. But look at the literal direct meaning. No, he's not saying remove him from his committees. He's saying, how about the human race? Remove him from the human, not from human. He's saying remove him from the human race. And General Michael Hayden is saying, well, you know, people. Yeah, here's the worst part. Let's tell you Hayden's response. He said, how did he say it? Surprised to wake up this morning and discover that many MAGA nuts had lost their minds over my suggestion that Coach Tuberville not be considered a member of the human race. That's not what you said. I stand by that view. I'm wishing you all a nice day, even the intransigent Tommy Tuberville. You didn't say considered a member of the human race. You said removed. He was asked about being removed from his committee, and you said removed from the human race. Didn't say a member. You said removed. That's what the question was, and that's how you responded. Mike just reminded me. Rush Limbaugh used to do a hilarious job on Reich, would show a picture of him only showing the top of his head from the eyes up to show how short he is. Right. Look, I know that's technically mean, but the guys always come up short. Okay, so rapid descent has been achieved at this point. This article titled Jada Pinkett Smith's Wildest Will Smith Confessions and What Really Happened After Oscar Slap. So her memoir, which is called Worthy, evidently hit shelves yesterday. Hit shelves, Jesus. So, yeah, she's burying it all. The actress and Red Table Talk co-host has written a tell-all, Worthy, which hits bookshelves October 17th. The no-holds-barred memoir dives deep into her upbringing in Baltimore, her complicated marriage to Will Smith, her friendship with Tupac Shakur, as well as her past struggles with depression. In other words, you know, it's out now that she and Will Smith have lived apart since 2016. Well, let's face one fact. Will Smith is worth a bundle, and he's earned it. I don't care what you think of his politics. Will Smith has earned it. Will Smith is talented. Will Smith has been funny. Will Smith is a good rapper. I don't know about singer, but a good real. He's a good actor. You may not like him. I'm not his biggest fan, but he's a good actor. He's proven it. I mean, he's done some great roles. He is a good actor. And he's worth a bundle. He's worth it. Jada Pinkett Smith, anyone that wants to call in, let's give you the number, 319-527-6706. Anybody who wants to call in the next 2 minutes and give me a movie Jada Pinkett Smith has been in, and if it takes you more than 2 minutes to get through, I'll know that you had to look it up on Google. Name me a movie Jada Pinkett Smith has been in. Name me an award she's been nominated for. Exactly. Like I said, we're descending now. Now, let's get to full-fledged what the fuck. Because This is where we're descending into, like, what in the hell? What in the hell? Rapper convicted of pumping millions to Obama campaign seeks new trial, says an ex-attorney used AR for his argument. Praz Michelle of the Fugees was found guilty of acting as a foreign agent for China and other charges after April's trial involving Leonardo DiCaprio testimony. He wasn't convicted of shooting someone or anything. He was convicted of illegal, gosh darn it. He's arguing that his former lawyer used artificial intelligence to generate his closing argument before the hip-hop artist was found guilty of helping a foreign national launder millions of dollars in illegitimate contributions to former President Barack Obama's campaign. I mean, seriously, trying to stop this background noise that's coming from these... I'm going to close it. I'm going to reopen it. See if I can get it without the... But he claims that his lawyer used AI in his speech, in his closing argument. So he was convicted in April of taking part in an extensive conspiracy to use about $88 million in foreign funds to engage in illegal back-channel lobbying. Unlawful contributions to Barack Obama's campaign at the direction of the People's Republic of China. He says his attorney used an experimental AI program to write his closing argument, which made frivolous arguments, conflated the schemes, and failed to highlight key weaknesses in the government's case. He then publicly boasted that the AI program turned hours or days of legal work into seconds, his new defense team says. It is now apparent that Kenner and his co-counsel appear to have had an undisclosed financial stake in the AI program, and they experimented with it during Praz Michelle's trial so they could issue a press release afterward promoting the program, a clear conflict of interest. In a declaration accompanying the motion, former federal prosecutor Peter Zeidberg noted how Michelle's prior publicist also informed members of the current defense team that Kenner proudly stated at the end of the trial words to the effect of, AI wrote our closing. Zeidberg cited a press release published by a firm called iLevel in May that claimed its AI litigation assistance technology, quote unquote, made history in becoming the first use of generative AI in a federal trial. It involved testimony from high-profile witnesses, including Leo DiCaprio and former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, former member of the hip-hop band The Fugees, who was on trial for international fraud charges, omitting the fact he had been convicted on all 10 felony charges after 3 days of deliberation. In other words, it wasn't just all 10 charges. So this wasn't like a mix-up. This was all 10 charges. And he, of course, he's this rapper, and you're seeing, oh, gosh. It's just totally descending here. I mean, we're literally getting to what-the-fuck territory. Yeah, that's where we're going, folks. That's where we're going. It's like Thugville. Now, here where we go. Public school teacher. This one is just bizarre. How did it get into public school? New York City public school teacher shares image depicting Hamas paraglider, calls attack, quote unquote, successful military campaign. Mohammed Jihad Ahmad was ripped online for defending Hamas paragliders murdering music festival attendees and babies. I mean, seriously? A New York City public school teacher expressed support for the Hamas terrorist organization and its assault on Israeli civilians that included the murder of more than 1,300 people and at least 150 kidnappings, then repeatedly doubled down on the position. Ahmad, who teaches at Gotham Tech High School, good Lord, according to his LinkedIn profile, changed his Facebook cover photo to an image of a person paragliding with a Palestinian flag attached to the parachute with "I stand with Palestine," according to a screenshot flagged on X, formerly Twitter, by user Justin Spiro. The same image, also widely shared by Black Lives Matter after Hamas's surprise attack, references how terrorists descended into Israeli communities with parachutes and gliders, killing hundreds of people and taking civilian hostages. Now, this New York social worker wrote, "I am shaking. New York City public school teacher Mohammed Jihad Ahmad made his Facebook cover photo, celebrating Hamas terrorists paragliding into an Israeli music festival and butchering 260 teens and young adults. How can Jews feel safe in Mohammed's classroom?" Spiro, a New York social worker, wrote to his more than 25,300 followers. In response, Jihad Ahmad spouted more anti-Israel rhetoric. "Look at this clown and the others," in his replies. "So-called Israel is a settler colony that was invented and only continues to exist through terrorism, dispossession, ethnic cleansing, and ongoing incremental genocide, significantly increasing since Israel took control of the West Bank and Gaza Strip in 1967. Took issue on Saturday with the New York Post report that included some of his public posts. The Post story dealt with the city's Department of Education sending teachers a lengthy list of websites with information for class discussion on the Israel-Hamas war. While some critics told the Post the department distributed links with anti-Israel bias, such as resources from Al Jazeera and Amnesty International. Yes, I call it Al Jazeera. Jihad Ahmad took the opposite stance, blasting school's chancellor David Banks for sending what he called Zionist propaganda. He says, "It goes without saying, free Palestine from the river to the sea." I mean, really? Yeah, I told you, this is descending rapidly. And now let's just get right to the plane crash, the smithereens. This is a story, and it actually appears on Fox News. Not Fox News Entertainment, not Fox News Business, Fox News. Ed Begley Jr. learned the truth about his biological mother as a teen. Seriously. I mean, seriously. Let's forget what the story says, only to say Ed Begley learned of he learned life-changing information about his biological mother in an unusual way. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, holy crap, that thing's taken, huh? Begley reflected on discovering the woman he thought had been his mother, Amanda, was in fact his stepmom. Well, dude, from what I'm understanding, and I don't check this stuff out, but from what I'm understanding, that should be like a major porn story for you. He said, "Just before I turned 16, I was with my father en route to take my driver's license test. On my birth certificate, the box for my mother's name was blank. Amanda had died of cancer in 1957 when I was 7, he recalled. I asked about the empty space. Dad was silent, but eventually told me that my real mother was Sandy, someone I long thought was a family friend. He continued, later he told me Sandy had been an NBC page with whom he had an affair. The result was my sister, Aline, then me, 11 months later. Nothing in our family was what it seemed. Our older brother, Tom, turned out to be our cousin." Begley explained that he and his sister would meet with Sandy regularly when he was younger, and they both enjoyed her company. However, he admitted that when he learned the truth about their relationship, he felt, quote, cheated and lied to. "I met Sandy as my mother for the first time at 16. She never married. Her only family was her mother, and she didn't hide us from her. We'd see Sandy about once or twice a year. And she saw my success before passing in 1998. Okay. Like a lot of you, I kind of forgot who the hell Ed Begley is. I'm going to say it. At the same time, I'm grateful I haven't had to endure this stuff. But, I mean, like, really? How is this a story? who cares about the story? And is the person who did this story actually being paid to do these types of stories? I mean, this is right up there with the Jada Pinkett Smith. This is appearing on what is considered, I guess, a credible website. And it's literally gone from, I mean, it's just gone to this. I mean, for the love of God, will somebody, anybody, please find Bat Boy? Raise your hand if you remember who Bat Boy was. That was a Weekly World News deal back in the 90s, I would say. Maybe late 80s, maybe even into the 2000s. Bat Boy. Somebody please find Bat Boy, and somebody please find Bigfoot. At that point, I might feel it safe to go back on the internet. I mean, literally, we need a dose of sanity. I mean, just saying, we need a dose. Anyway, this is, aside from, like, Israel, the House Speaker deal, and Halloween, of course, it's the reason I cringe anymore, anytime I turn on a TV app or hit the internet. I mean, like, there are times when I have to miss part of an Iowa game because I'm paddling or doing something. I cringe. That I mean, I always go to my home screen on my phone, so I don't end up where I was before when I was on the internet. But I have to go through those screens to check the scores. This is how afraid I am of getting on the internet these days. I mean, Ed Begley, we have this 10-minute story on Ed Begley finding out who was something that happened when he was like 16, and he's born in, so he's 73 years old. Do we really care? And Jada Pinkett Smith, I'm telling you, I didn't get all the way to this. The reason Jada Pinkett Smith is going through all this stuff and why she's particularly pointing out that they've been separated since 2016 and have chosen not to divorce, et cetera, you know the game she's playing, right? She's done nothing. She's a nobody in the entertainment world, comparatively speaking, certainly compared to her husband. So she's setting the stage for any kind of divorce, and she's going to clean him out. In other words, you aren't leaving me around. Oh, hell no. Not leaving me behind. I'm going to get mine. That's what she's doing. That's what she's saying. But here's the thing. It's been like a four-day, four-part story from Fox News. Now, I'm not saying Fox News is the best. A lot of people have abandoned Fox News and say, Fox, you know, because they call the race for Biden or whatever. That's just pollsters. That's people working in the newsroom. Did Fox abandon Trump? Yeah. As far as reading news stories on the internet, Fox has some pretty decent writers. I mean, when you read a story on FoxNews.com, Fox News Digital, it's usually coherent. It's put together fine. It's put together well. So I choose that over, you know, I'm not going to pay to get like Wall Street Journal or any other. I don't pay. Why should I pay for news? But they're literally descending to this. But I also think it's a symptom of what the hell is happening on this planet. As I said earlier, I don't even get the anti-Semitism. Why? Because I'm not an anti-Semite. I have Jewish friends. I dated a Jewish girl. I mean, I've done business with Jews since I've been in business. I mean, I just don't get the anti-Semitic crap. But when I see some of these people, it's like, don't ever sit there and talk about the Klan and white people in the Klan, because you anti-Semites are making the folks in the Klan look like a fucking think tank is what you're doing. You people that think you're pro-Palestinian, you don't even know the history. You don't know that there's no such thing as Palestine or as Palestinians. And like I said, the next person, I've actually had people that say, what about the Philistines? Good God. If somebody ever says that to you when you're talking about it, run. Don't run. Hitting them and beating them over the head with a stick would be against the law, and you don't want to do that. So just run. Don't waste your time. Anybody who's that much of an idiot buys into that crap. But so I said, I don't get the anti-Semitism. I don't get some of these people, but I'll tell you what, they're scarier than anything. They're scarier. They're as scary as the Black Lives Matter people. Why? Because they are the same people in a way. I mean, it's different sides of the same coin, but in a lot of cases, a lot of the people are showing up on both sides of the coin. The two, the movements are all very related, interrelated, interlinked. Okay, I said I was going to talk about this RFK Jr. Now, first of all, I'd like to figure out how his campaign got my email address. Now, it says it was because I'm an activist or a Florida voter. What the hell? I can think of a couple of scenarios why they got it. None of them are good. So I got an invite to some deal the other night called Declare My Independence, some rally he held. It was last week. So let's clear up a few things. One, he is not an independent, quote-unquote independent, unless you categorize someone who is Bernie Sanders but against vaccines as independent. He is a Kennedy and all that that entails. He is not a maverick. His family is not and was not maverick. His father was not a maverick. His Uncle Teddy was not a maverick. His Uncle John was not a maverick. Think about this. Before RFK Jr.'s recent power quest, the most notable thing from that family in the last 20 years was Uncle Fat Ass Teddy endorsing Obama for president instead of Hillary Clinton. That's the most notable thing the Kennedy family has done politically in the last 20 years. Uncle Fat Ass endorsing Obama for president instead of Hillary. Folks, that ain't maverick. That's endorsing a communistic New World Order seeking megalomaniac. That's not maverick. Two, being against all vaccines isn't maverick. It's borderline idiotic. Many vaccines throughout our history have actually been life-saving. Know anybody recently with polio? Know anybody that's died from tetanus? No. Newfangled vaccines, forcing them, you know, more often than originally prescribed? Yes, that's not good. But it doesn't. Being against all vaccines, is it being against the COVID vaccine isn't really maverick. RFK Jr. wearing it as a badge of honor isn't maverick. It's manipulation, not to mention attention whoring. This next one, I'm just going to say it. No. Just no. He would not be a good running mate for Trump. Stop. If you're seeing it, don't even like a post that says that. He would not be a good running mate for Trump, nor would he be a good running mate for anyone that you should want to vote for. Look, number four, his family money is not like it once was. We always hear people talk about the Kennedy dynasty. They had problems over the years. They were buying themselves out of a lot of scandals, for one. It's nowhere in the league of top earners or top-level wealth accumulation anymore. You don't, for purposes of this discussion, ignore the actual source of most of that wealth, by the way. Fact remains, they aren't anywhere near the top of a Forbes or a Fortune list. Which begs the question, who is funding this and why? Because I can categorically state as an independent, quote-unquote independent, he will not win. He will not be close. Thus, to me, is begged the deeper question. Is he just a joke or is he a plant by the DNC or a faction or factions within the DNC? Look, I think he will split GOP/Trump votes much more than he will siphon DNC/Biden/whoever. I know some people think, no, he'll split the Democrat. I don't think so. I think hardcore Democrats are voting for Biden. We're never going to vote for Kennedy. There's a very small percentage that would be siphoned. I think it definitely would hurt a Trump candidacy much more. And I say it would because I don't think he'll last. Look, anywhere online, the majority of those giving credence to him are not liberals or progressives or average Democrats. Those are not the people giving him credence. Those aren't the people liking his posts and shit like that. It's people that you and I would think of as conservatives who are saying, you know, wow. Now, that stupid meme of Trump looking at JFK's picture and saying, I'll finish what you started. Stop with that. Believe me. JFK was about JFK. He was not about the good of the country. He wasn't about smashing the military-industrial complex. He wasn't about ending Vietnam, and he wasn't about spreading the wealth. What he was about was furthering personal gain and agenda, weakening our military and redistributing wealth, just not his family's wealth. People say, oh, he was for this. No, he wasn't. God, how history gets revised. His attempt, RFK Jr.'s attempt to placate Israel is really nothing short of mind-boggling. Never mind. He has, first of all, during that interview, he literally sounded like he swallowed half a ton of gravel like minutes before the interview. But his half answers and his quasi-committal to Israel totally belie his behavior toward and about Israel and Judaism in his past, both historical and recent. You don't get awarded anti-Semite of the week without making the effort. And yes, a couple of weeks ago I talked about that. Stop Anti-Semitism, I think was the name of the organization, made him anti-Semite of the week. And that was, that wasn't like, it was like a month or two ago, several months ago. He was named Anti-Semite of the week. Folks, you don't get that award effort. You just don't. But it begs the question, why is he there? What are they trying to get out of this? What is somebody trying to get out? Because I'm sorry, he's not a serious candidate as an independent. He's just not. Don't think that he is. He's not. Okay, going to take a quick break and come back with some college football. Meanwhile, hey, it's still Halloween time, so let's celebrate with a little music from It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Vince Guaraldi with the Great Pumpkin Waltz from It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. That's, I think, the part when Linus is walking through with Sally and telling her about the Great Pumpkin and whatnot. Great stuff. It's Halloween time. It's Halloween season. I mean, yeah, you got all your classics like Halloween 1, Halloween 2. Once they got to Season of the Witch, that was, The Rob Zombie remakes aren't bad either. There's other stuff, that's some of the other horror slasher flicks that aren't really necessarily Halloween related, but they're shown this at this time of year. But it gets right back to It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. It's still the benchmark of Halloween programming. Always will be. We are back. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports. It is Wednesday, October the 18th, 2023. You can listen in, of course, live, coming into blogtalkradio.com, finding live and finding Global Patriot Radio. You can come into the chat room if you want, as Indy Hawk has done, and as has Joseph Gibson, who has a show Tuesday nights, Restoring Our Republic. Mike says, you left out Rocky Horror Picture Show. No, 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 emphatic no. Anyway, Joseph Gibson is in with his shows on Tuesday nights. I know he might have other nights too. And way to find out, anytime you go to a show that you like, and his should be one of them, Restoring Our Republic, click on it to follow it, and you'll get, you know, assuming you have an account with an ID sign in, you'll get notifications of the show. He's also running for State House in North Carolina, District 65. So that'll be a crucial election in that state, because we want to, across our country, but it starts locally, we want to encourage the election of conservative candidates who will bring America back to what our founding principles were. And people think that when they say founding, well, you mean slave? No, I'm not talking about slavery. I mean, stop with that. You mean white people get rich? God, no. When we were a republic, when we were properly governed, properly managed, not in these stupid wars. I mean, war can, at times, can be the only answer. Think about the current crisis in the Middle East. Nobody wants war. I mean, Israel, if they could do it without war, they would. They're not doing this because they want to go to war. They're responding to terrorist attacks. And what Hamas has shown, and Iran and Hezbollah by extension, is that, no, Israel would peace, except they know. The only terms for which Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran would accept peace is, one, the obliteration of Israel as a country, in other words, for Israel to cease to exist, and two, for all Jews to cease to exist. Unless you're a total moron or a total anti-Semite or a Muslim, those terms are not acceptable, of course. So Israel has no choice. But if Israel could defend itself or could press for peace without having to go to war and without having to sacrifice its sovereignty, of course they would. More so than some American folks over the years. We've had presidents or whatever that have gotten us into stuff that, wow, including the aforementioned JFK. No, he may not have started things in Vietnam, but he certainly didn't slow down. The movie romanticizes and said he was stopping Vietnam. No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. Anyway, we are off the serious stuff. We're back into our college football discussion for the week. So last weekend, NCAAs, they're wanting some NIL changes, name, image, and likeness. They want to put schools more in control, which is exactly what we were told that would never happen. Possibly classify athletes as employees, which we were, of course, told would never happen. So that's going on. Several of them have testified in a Senate hearing, including the likes of Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti, and Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick. Now, they testified in front of the Judiciary Committee. I don't know why why Congress is hearing stuff from the NCAA, but they are. Charlie Baker is the former governor of Massachusetts. Now, he touted recent reforms by the NCAA, including more long-term health insurance for athletes, degree completion funds for up to 10 years, and scholarship protection. 10 years? Good God, if you can't get it done in 5 years for free, maybe college isn't for you. They've been lobbying Congress for help with the federal law to regulate NIL compensation. Several bills have been introduced or made public, including, quote, a few bipartisan efforts. Lindsey Graham from South Carolina says, Utah is offering everybody on the team a new truck. He says, between the transfer portal and NIL, college football is in absolute chaos. That I will agree with, but whatever. But, yeah, getting the schools involved, I don't know, maybe it'll help on one level when you think about it. I mean, if they have a limit, if they have some kind of limitation, that's the problem. So last week, number 7, Washington, big win over number 8, Oregon. Number 21, Notre Dame, bitch slapped number 10 and previously undefeated USC. Notre Dame does have 2 losses. In fact, they're still talking about them for the college football playoff is a joke. Number 11, Alabama held on by 3 points over Arkansas. Number 12, North Carolina gave Miami, Florida its 2nd consecutive loss. By the way, Miami head coach Mario Cristobal took full blame for that fiasco they had the previous week. Remember, it led to a loss against Georgia Tech, the game's final play. All they had to do was take a knee. They handed off and fumbled, and Georgia Tech scored on the last play of the game. 1-4 Pitt took out number 14, formerly undefeated Louisville, the same Louisville that the week before had beat Notre Dame, I think, by 10. Number 19, Washington State, took it by 38 points to Arizona. Number 24, Kentucky, took a double-digit loss as well to Missouri. The Big Ten, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State all romped over inferior opponents. Rutgers was down 24-6 to start the fourth quarter. Got some huge plays to come back and win 27-24 over Michigan State. Here's the funny part. A fumble return on a punt attempt. Michigan State was lined up to punt. Their punter fumbled the ball in the end zone. And Michigan State this week hosts Michigan. And the reason I say that is, remember 2015, Michigan State was down. All Michigan had to do was punt snap. But instead they fumbled it and it led to a last play touchdown. Well, anyway, Michigan State had a fumble punt on a punt attempt. Then they had a free kick. Rutgers scored a second TD a few minutes later. And then on the free kick, Michigan State like bungled the return. Free ball, Rutgers recovered it and then got the final score. You know, the weird part, not even half the fourth quarter had gone by. It all took place in less than half a quarter. But yeah, let's just say it. Michigan State is in serious disarray. Brother Tommy's Illini. He hates it when I say that, but fresh off a humiliating loss to Nebraska, actually came back. They got a win over Maryland, the very same Maryland that gave Ohio State everything they could handle the previous week. Got a walk-off field goal. Maryland had tied the game with the minute 31, and then Illinois came up with a walk-off field goal. The noon games this week, Rutgers at Indiana, number 7, Penn State goes to Ohio State to play it in the horseshoe. 3:30, we got Wisconsin heading down to Illinois, Northwestern going to Nebraska. 7:30, again, Michigan goes to East Lansing to take on the Spartans. I'll go with Rutgers over Indiana. I'll go with Illinois over Wisconsin, believe it or not. I'm going to go with Nebraska over Northwestern. I'll go with Michigan over a near-death Michigan State. We should really want Northwestern to win. We really should want Northwestern to win. Just saying. Now, a really good one coming up. Penn State at Ohio State. It's going to be an excellent game, number one. However, I am not going with Ohio State in this one. I think Ohio State's shaky. I think they got some issues. I think they got some injuries. I think Penn State's for real. I think this is the year. I think Penn State gets over that, the Ohio State hump this year. Now, the Michigan-Penn State game will be epic. I really believe that. But anyway, Hawkeyes should want Northwestern to beat Nebraska. The East matchups don't really matter much as far as how it affects us. Illinois, Wisconsin, doesn't really matter. We've got the edge on Wisconsin now with a head-to-head. We just need to take care of business. That's what it really boils down to. So let's get to it. Now for the Hawks. Last week, we visited Madison, take on the Badgers. We had lost tight end number one, Luke Lachey. We lost quarterback number one, Cade McNamara. Other depth chart personnel, we've been taking some hits. So we lost tight end number two, Eric All, high-profile transfer from Michigan, along with former teammate quarterback number one, Cade McNamara. Second Michigan Spartan, former Michigan Spartan, Michigan Wolverine, get a ACL tear. Now, his was McNamara, it looked like his knee just gave out. Eric All, it looked like it wasn't a target. I mean, people that say Wisconsin guy was targeting, he was not. It was an unfortunate hit. It wasn't the most form tackle, but it wasn't, he wasn't targeting. He wasn't trying to injure him. Similar to the game against Purdue, we got a big play. The Hawks got a big play TD run, 82 yards, this time from running back two, LaShawn Williams, who ended the game with 174 rushing yards. Despite quarterback Deacon Hill showing very little mobility and even less passing touch, in addition to the touchdown, we got two additional field goals, plus we got a safety when our defensive line forced a fumble in the end zone. Wisconsin recovered it, but the ball was down, of course, which resulted in the safety. We won 15-6, and while the Badgers were favored between 9 or 10 points, depending on where you look, we actually won consecutive games now over Wisconsin for the first time since the 2008 and 2009 seasons. Yeah, that's the first time in 14 years since we last beat them consecutive seasons. Here's an interesting stat that Mike sent along. It was only the fourth time in the last century that Wisconsin has not scored a TD at home at Camp Randall Stadium. Two of those were against the Iowa Hawkeyes, 2015 and then this season. I do think we're starting to get a ground game going. This is now 2 weeks in a row with a Hawkeye running back going over 100 yards. Last season, I think we had just three or four games with a 100-yard rusher. We've already got that this season. We've had LaShawn Williams go over 100 earlier this season. We've had a couple guys get close. So, yeah, I think we are starting to show some run game. The injury front's not good. Quarterback one, tight ends one and two, several other backup tight ends, some defensive backs, some defensive linemen. We are supposed to get at least one of the tight ends back, and possibly, best of all, the NCAA is reviewing the penalties / punishments for players that have been busted for gambling, especially with regard to players who did not either bet on games involving their own team or their own sport. In the case of Hawkeyes, defensive lineman Noah Shannon has cleared to return to practice. It is expected he will return to the playing field. Now, look, North Carolina got one of their transfer players back almost abruptly. It was like he kept getting denied, and then all of a sudden he's on. So it's high time the NCAA got their act together and let Noah Shannon back on the field. He admitted to everything. He was not underage gambling. He wasn't convicted of anything because he wasn't underage. He did not do anything illegal. And gambling, as it's been pointed out, gambling is all over now. Supreme Court has said states can't limit gambling, sports gambling. So it's time to let him back on the field. Anyway, when that does happen, it will add a ton of skill, but not to, the more importantly, defensive line. Aaron Graves was hurt. Looked like last weekend, no mention of how he is. I did not see. I know that Eric All, it was announced, is definitely out for the season. I did not hear the status of Aaron Graves. So we shall see. Stylianos and Addison Ostrenga will be the tight ends. They both have got some skills. Johnny Pascuzzi as well, but we need our tight ends at Iowa. This Saturday, of course, we host Minnesota 3:30 on NBC or Peacock. We are now ranked 24th by the AP poll and 23rd in the coaches. Hawkeyes are 6-1 now, 3-1 in the Big Ten. Play the Gophers. Minnesota is 3-3 overall and 1-2 in the conference. Any way you look at this, look, no game is a gimme with Iowa. Let's get that right out of the way. But we are favored by 3.5, which I think is maybe a little light, with over-under of just 31 points. ESPN's matchup predictor has Iowa with a 73.1% probability of winning this game. So there is that. 73.1. Statistically speaking, the Gophers have the leading passer between the two teams and the leading rusher. The Hawkeyes have the leading receiver, tight end Eric All. But as we know, as I mentioned, Eric All will not be on the field this Saturday or for the rest of the season. Kind of unfortunate. Let's look at the Hawkeye defense. Yes, Wisconsin did have a couple big runs Saturday. Still, the Hawks kept Braylon Allen under 100 yards. They did not give up any TDs. Got a fumble recovery from linebacker Jay Higgins, who also had 13 tackles, 7 of which were solo. By the way, is it me? Or is he not being mentioned enough? Or he is definitely a Defensive Player of the Year candidate in the Big Ten, at minimum Linebacker of the Year candidate. I mean, it's pretty clear that this guy, you know, he was getting on the field last year. He just wasn't starting. Well, he was playing behind Jack Campbell, who, by the way, won the Butkus and is starting as a rookie in the NFL. But, yeah, he's just all over the place. I liked him last year, and that's why I said, I've been saying this year, he is going to be a monster, and he is. Holy crap. And you listen to him. He's just got a good head on his shoulders. Just a nice kid. Talk about why he stayed. He's not about, you know, he wanted to learn the process, et cetera. I mean, just great kid. I've talked about his father, Roy. It was his birthday last week. Roy, if you're on Twitter, look up at Higginized. That's Roy Higgins. Great guy. And once you see him, you will understand why his son is the way he is. Yeah, not just as a player, but just as a great guy. Just a level-headed, good head on his shoulders, humble. You'll see all that. Defensive back / cash, Sebastian Castro also had 7 tackles, all solo, 2 for loss. He also had an interception near the end of the game, could have gone for a TD. He knelt down so that the Hawkeye offense could run out the clock. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Not from a point standpoint. I don't care about the Bry line, but the score would have made it virtually a 3-score game. At best, Wisconsin would have had to have a successful 2-point conversion on at least one touchdown. I'm just not sure I want the ball in the hands of our offense at that point. Take the points, as they say. The Hawkeye defensive line was very disruptive. They only registered 1 sack. The fumble that resulted in the safety was both DL pressure and excellent downfield pass coverage. Look, the defense did give up 1 pass completion of 42 yards. They gave up no runs over 20 yards. They also held Wisconsin on a couple of critical 4th down conversion attempts. Special teams was good to great. The return game made no mistakes aside from a couple holding penalties. But those didn't nullify any big returns. The punting and kicking was absolutely sensational. Drew Stevens hit both his field goal attempts. He hit his PAT attempt. Torrey Taylor punted 10 times for a 50.6-yard average. Included 6 punts inside the 20-yard line. None of those were touchbacks. He basically flipped the field when we needed him. He shanked nothing. Hawks coverage was great, yielded just 27 total return yards. That's a net punting average of 47.9 net punting average. Yeah, I'd say that's pretty stellar. This week is crucial because, the players have to be on somewhat of a high after pulling off the win in Madison. The Gopher offense is almost as anemic as Iowa's. They rank very similar statistically. However, their defense is not nearly as good as Iowa's. Their field goal kicker, believe it or not, when you look, is on par with Drew Stevens. Has a good leg, very accurate. Their punting game is at a decided disadvantage versus the Hawkeyes. and Torrey Taylor. Where I see the difference really is in the form of big plays and big players. I'm not seeing a Cooper DeJean or a Jay Higgins on the defensive side for them. No real game breaker on the offensive side of the ball. Like I said, their offense ranks just slightly better than Iowa's nationally, but again, no apparent big play capability thus far. They don't have any, you know, I think their longest run is scrimmage is 43 yards. I think their longest completion is, let me look again, but I'm pretty sure their longest completion was like nothing. I mean, it was like, what the hell, that's it? Now, look, I'm not saying the Hawkeyes are lighting up in terms of long completions either, but no, they're not setting any records. Minnesota isn't. It does boil down to big plays, and I think Iowa is capable of making them, and I'm pretty sure Minnesota is not. So, yeah, their long reception is 37 yards. That's it. Their long pass play of the year is 37 yards. Their long run play of the year is 43 yards. So, yeah, no real big playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. And I'm not saying the Hawkeyes are loaded with them. Do have some guys that can make plays. So, yeah, look, I'll take the Hawkeyes to cover, maybe even by double digits. But I think it will still be low scoring, say along the lines of 14-3 or 17-7. Now, Hawkeye Mike says 21. He says 21-10. That would be right at the over-under. I frankly think the under is a safe bet. Mike mentions this. He says, Iowa just matches up well with Minnesota in the Fleck era. That is true. They really do. But for those of you that actually do bet on college football, I would take the under. But I think the Hawkeyes cover 3.5. I'm sorry. That's just for a tailgate menu, I'd go with a huge pot of chili. We did that at the doghouse. Had a big pot of chili on a grill one time. Go with grilled brats. Grilled Italian sausages. What the heck? Bring both out there. Maybe even some kielbasa. Maybe a nice pot of sauerkraut. A nice beer selection. And some Fireball. Funny thing is, Mrs. Hank just brought some Fireball into the office here where I am. She's taking a swig. My God, she's taking a swig. She's still working. This is the weird part. She's still actually working. Maybe even start a tailgate breakfast with coffee. With a shot or two of Fireball thrown in. I was doing that on our cruise. Add the usual assortment of pretzels and chips, of course, to aid in the soaking up of the alcohol. Look, projected high temperature of 61 degrees, minimal chance of rain. It's coming off an overnight low of 50. Oh, yeah, a bottle of screwdriver. Oh, okay, we're going to tell the story. We're going to tell Mrs. Hank has allowed me to tell these two stories. But anyway, projected high of 61, coming off an overnight low of 50, but you're heading into an overnight low of 39. So go with jeans or sweats, a Hawkeye polo or t-shirt, Hawkeye long sleeve rash guard shirt, Hawkeye sweatshirt. That ought to cover it. Baseball cap should be fine. If you're hanging around outside post-game, maybe add a stocking cap and some gloves. If you're going to wear gloves, make sure they have that fingertip material so you can still use your phone to check scores. So Mrs. Hank has given me permission to tell these two stories. Hawkeye Mike remembers because he mentioned it. Others probably remember in 2019 with some friends of ours, the friends we just went on a cruise with, in fact. In 2019, we went back to Chicago to go to the Iowa Northwestern game. So we got armed with our tailgate material. And so I made up some screwdrivers and poured them into like 20-ounce water bottles, you know. We chugged down our water and then poured screwdrivers in there for people. I gave my wife one, took one myself. I filled another one with beer. Mrs. Hank, I think, filled both of them. So anyway, we get off. We're in North Chicago, like near north side of Chicago. We're going up to Evanston. We get off the L. My wife shows me her empty frigging screwdriver bottle. Wasn't going to be good. I knew that. So she's starting to waver a bit, and we go into this place called Mustard's Last Stand. It's a big hot dog joint there right near the old Dyke Stadium, now called Ryan Field. And I'm outside talking with my buddy, and his wife comes out and says, your wife needs you inside. Well, it was very hot inside. They had the heat going. It was a cold day, really windy, kind of rained a lot too the second half. I go in there, and she's ripped. I mean, she's ripped. And she's like, I need water. I finally said, maybe let's get her outside out of the heat. So she did rally. She did not drink anymore that game. But she did rally enough not to hurl all over the place. But yeah. So she showed me the bottle of Fireball just now. The Outback Bowl in 2017, after the 2016 season. The same friends we were just talking about, he took a thing called a Firebox to our tailgate. Now, a Firebox is a big box with two 1.75-liter plastic bags filled with Fireball whiskey. So as people came up to the tailgate, he was pouring a Fireball shot and then having one with him. So he wasn't exactly sober himself that day. So he's ripping through the Fireball, as was everyone. Well, at the end, he pulls out one bag and says, this thing's gone. And there was a hefty, it was probably 4 ounces in the bottom. And Mrs. Hank says, hell no, there's still a lot in there. I'll drink that bitch. That's literally my wife. If you know my wife, that's not her. I'll drink that bitch. She takes this thing. She opens the valve on the thing and power squirts the whole 4 ounces of Fireball down her gut. And somehow survived that one as well. It was magical, really. I mean, how proud I am of my wife. I really am. It's funny. You could give her a beer, two beers, and she is like wobbly. One beer. She's wobbly, but man, Fireball, somehow she's immune. She it doesn't affect her. So anyway, I mentioned the Fireball with coffee. On our cruise, we found this generous bartender. We didn't find him. Our friends did, and he merely served us in the same way. And I was drinking coffee. It was cold. This cruise was to Alaska. And so I said, hey, I'll have coffee with a shot of Fireball, a couple shots of Fireball in it. I've never heard of that before. Never heard of it. I mean, tons of people at the bar were saying, a couple were saying, oh, that's a new one. But several were like, oh, that's a great idea. But most people would know. T. Bodie's saying Lush. I'm not sure if he's talking about me or Mrs. Hank. But, yeah, if you're tailgating this Saturday at the game, you know, you're going to have your beers probably. Some people take Bloody Marys, but it's going to be a little chilly. So consider taking your coffee to wake up, but loading it with a little Fireball. It's good stuff. If you like Fireball, now, I personally like one called Catch Fire. I also like Jack Fire, but Fireball is just so readily available. They're all good. I mean, the Fireball is like flavored, whereas Catch Fire is actual cinnamon infused. And I think Jack Fire is as well. But so, yeah, do that. Like I said, grilled brats, maybe Italian sausages, some kielbasa, a nice pot of sauerkraut, the chili, and a beer selection. And like I said, some Fireball with maybe coffee. I'm right now, it's been my tradition the last couple of weeks since Hawkeye Mike did it. I grab a beer for the football talk. I'm right now torquing on a bottle of Angry Orchard Sinful Apple Cider. Hard cider, good stuff. Got it out of like an assortment pack of Angry Orchard. I got it for the Purdue game. And you'd think I'd have finished it by now. And I think some of the dogs that are listening, Indy Hawk in the chat room, T. Bodie on the phones, they're probably quite disappointed that I'm still working on the same 12-pack from the Purdue game. Because at the doghouse, I would be sanctioned at a minimum, if not punished, severely punished. So there is that. Okay, so final call. Hawkeye Mike said, believe it or not, I made myself a screwdriver. Hopefully he's honoring Mrs. Hank. So final call. I'm calling the Hawks. I want to call it 24-3. I don't think Minnesota gets a touchdown. I will be disappointed if they do. And I think the Hawks are going to get a defensive touchdown. But I also think they're going to score some points. Not anything spectacular. I just think we get a big play, probably on the ground, maybe a screen pass to one of our running backs. But, yeah, I'm going to call it 24-3. We're still not going to pass the Bry line. For those wondering, no, Brian Ferentz doesn't automatically get fired if they don't average 25 points per game. There are several stipulations, and most of those would just mean he would not get bonuses based on performance. But no, he's not going to get fired if they don't score 25 points a game, especially if they win like 9 or 10 games. And right now, frankly, the Hawkeyes, it's not out of the realm of possibility for the Hawkeyes to win 11 games this year, to win out. Now, I'm not saying they will. But after getting out of that game in Madison, you can't discount anything. T. Bodie just sent me something. I forgot about this. Swarm Beer, Swarm Golden Ale for Hawkeye fans. Agree with the NIL stuff and giving the collectives. I totally get that. I sort of half feel that way myself, but there is a way you could support the cause by buying Swarm Golden Ale. If you're in Iowa, maybe parts of Illinois, Nebraska, it's carried at some grocery chains that go over state lines. Swarm Golden Ale is put out by Exile Brewing, I believe, in Des Moines. And Brad Heinrichs, who is the CEO of the Swarm, worked out this deal along with others, I'm sure, so that they're making a contribution to the NIL collective when you buy Swarm Golden Ale. So we shall see how that all goes. Hopefully it raises a lot of money for the Swarm. In the meantime, Indy Hawk says, not good, Hank. I know what he's saying. He's disappointed. He's got a right to be, but hey, I got a right to be responsible too. I have to be. Here's the thing. Right now when I'm not paddling at night right now. I'm mainly paddling during the day. I can't be torquing down beers on a tour. I just can't. Last year at this time, I was basically working. It was a slow paddling time, so I was basically doing like DoorDash or Uber Eats. So I wasn't scheduling myself for Saturday. Hell no. I was drinking and watching football. So this year I got to be a little more careful while I'm paddling and stuff. So, okay, final call, as I said, Hawkeyes 24-3. Not going to cover the over, but they are going to cover the points. I think the bigger game, obviously, it doesn't affect the Hawkeyes in terms of standings of the Big Ten West, but the East, Ohio State-Penn State game, could be huge. Now, from the standpoint of different scenarios, people have talked about this. What if Iowa wins out and wins the Big Ten championship game? Now, look, Hawkeye fans, don't hang your hat on that. I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. It's just not. But if it does, Penn State, they would both be 12-1, presumably. That would be a tough call. Does the Big Ten get two teams into the college football playoff? Now, frankly, the way we played against Penn State in State College, I wouldn't count on us winning. I would count on us performing better than we did, but don't count on us winning. But, I mean, what if we are 11-1 and beat Ohio State or Michigan? Well, if Penn State's only loss is to Ohio State, but Ohio State's in on the basis of tiebreaker or going 12-0. Penn State's got a legit claim versus Iowa. Now, what if it's, on the other hand, if we beat a 12-0 Ohio State or Michigan and Penn State still is 11-1, having lost one of those two? Well, gosh, 11-1 Iowa, 12-1 Iowa, 12-1 Michigan or Ohio State, and 12-1 Penn State. Penn State certainly has a claim at that point. So, yeah, the winner of the Ohio State-Penn State game, there's still other games left, obviously, but the winner of that game goes a long way to our future fortunes. But, yeah, we're right. Mike's right. If we win out, we would certainly be deserving if we won the Big Ten championship. But Hawkeye fans, don't be hanging your hat. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. I mean, I love Iowa football. I love Kirk Ferentz. I love Phil Parker. But just face facts. We're just not that good. We just don't have the offense. It's not going to suddenly get better overnight. It's just not. I mean, we could make some improvements through the rest of the season, but we're not going to happen. It's not going to happen, so don't even worry about it. And frankly, like I said, we've got to get through the rest of our season. It's very possible we could go 11-1. Every game is eminently winnable. But every game, there is definitely the potential for the Hawkeyes to get beat. The margin is very thin, roster-wise, et cetera. Well, that's it for this week. As Indy Hawk said, go Hawks. I want to thank Indy Hawk and Joe Gibson for being here, Joseph Gibson for being in the chat room. Remember Joseph Gibson Tuesday nights, restoring our republic. I want to thank Hawkeye Mike and T. Bodie for listening in on the phones. And it's been a fun time. In the meantime, have a great rest of your week. I'm heading over to the Space Coast, not for paddling, not for a space launch, but to celebrate my father-in-law's 80th birthday. He's been a great father-in-law, but he's really more than that. He's been a great friend. He really has. I'm looking forward to it because, my parents are all, both my parents are gone, and my wife's mother is gone. My father-in-law's, now my mom lived into her 80s, but my mother-in-law didn't make it. My father didn't make it. Both just short, but my father-in-law's making it to 80. So, and he's in great shape for someone that's turning 80. Great shape, both mentally and physically. He walks with us once or twice a week. He does regular exercise. He just went up to North Florida to help out in the recovery efforts after Hurricane Idalia. He still does that. He gets up every Monday and goes and does work for people in their church, like side projects and stuff. So, yeah, looking forward to it. So happy birthday to my father-in-law. This weekend, go Hawkeyes. Be safe out there, folks. Be vigilant. Let's remember to hold our elected officials accountable, wide, regionally, nationally. Let's pray for Israel and the Middle East. This is not going to be an overnight thing, and it is going to require some tough decision-making. So let's pray for leaders that are in the position to make those decisions. Pray for you all as well, that you be safe and that you have a good weekend and have a particularly great Saturday. College football time is a great time. God bless, folks. I'm going to send you out with the same song they used to take you out of This Week in Baseball, but they also use it for football stuff. Here you go. God bless you, folks. Good night.
Bye-bye.